Welcome to another episode, this time episode number 5 of FinZep Show. And it's again about mobility in context with the metaverse. And for that, we have another time a really great guest. And Rolf, who we have today?
Today, we have Usman with us. And, you know, I was checking a bit how to introduce him, and he has so much knowledge, everything around 3D, spatial computing, metaverse. So I think he's really a good fit for our mobility track after having Björn and Jan. So now we have the third person with us on our mobility track. And I would simply say, enough words, let's welcome Usman. Hey!
Ooh. Usman, welcome to the show. It's super nice that we have you, and you're coming from another time, a very different type of mobility. But I'm curious, what are you doing in your job? What types of immersive stuff or AR stuff are you dealing with? And also the personal side, are you using VR for yourself or AR? And what's, just tell us a little bit about yourself and this technology.
All right. So let's start with what I do. So I come from DB Systel. DB Systel is basically the IT company of German Railways, Deutsche Bahn. And what we did was we started back then in 2016, 2017. We were already doing 3D projects all around for architectural, also for some learning applications, doing gamifications and so on. And then with HTC Vive, we come up with the idea, this sounds quite interesting, that you can perform certain things, involve the muscle memory into the digital learning. And from there, we started the virtual reality training in 2016 with an internal venture, basically. So like an internal startup within DB introduced this topic, and the topic kind of picked up. I am very happy that the first case that we did was basically a passenger, handicapped passenger or specially abled passenger lift, which was to teach people how you can operate it and how you can bring people in and out of the train and so on. And from there onwards, we started developing our team further. Now we are around 25 people in immersive technologies, and we are doing like all kinds of things. So we are still doing a lot of virtual reality training simulations. We are doing applications with augmented reality, mixed reality to guide our workers in the shop floor. Then we also do applications that is focused towards the end customer, the passengers, the travelers, to provide them information. Then we are also doing a lot in the strategic area, because this is a strongly developing strategic technology that has impact all over. So now it's not only about use cases, it's about how we use mixed reality, virtual reality devices and so on in our everyday work, basically. And this is also what we are doing with the ideology of metaverse and industrial metaverse taking the big boom in there. And privately, of course, like if you have to do it professionally, you have to do it privately as well. You have to understand as well. So yeah, I am I love to try all the applications. Literally, I have to say that in the VR gaming world, I'm not hooked up yet. So I tried a lot of things. I enjoyed them for a while, but then it comes too repetitive, which in my opinion is not the medium for VR, basically. So maybe for sports where you can do repetitively and get better with it, but in general gaming, like shooters and so on, this is not my style of gaming anyways. But I really love to try experiences and learning applications and so on. But I remember that the game that really touched me was a Lego experience. Actually, I got it as a gift from my daughter on my birthday, and there was really like you can get some childhood memories out of it.
What would you say? How much time you spend on your daily work or weekly work routine using XR or AR devices?
Right. So personally, if you ask me, like, how much time do I spend? Because my work now involves more in the planning. So I don't do development myself. I come or my background is as a 3D artist, but I don't do any of this anymore. So for me, it's mostly when I test the applications and so on that comes from the team. So this is the time that I spend in it. Or if I get something that is very exciting for me to just try out and learn. But also, for example, I enjoy sometimes just kind of working in using the MetaQuest, basically. So to just having multiple screens, to go into the zone where nobody is disturbing you, to kind of having bigger screens in a nice space and then working there. So this is more what I like to do. But what I also enjoy is kind of showing it around, especially to the younger audience, to my daughter and so on. So this is also the area of engagement with VR and XR overall.
Yeah.
And then I like to try the new devices that comes out. So even when it's smaller devices, like last week I was testing a lot with this Brilliant Labs AR AI glasses with a heads-up display. That was quite fascinating, interesting. So things like that, what I really like to do.
Okay, that sounds quite interesting. Have you tried, let's say, these pretty young devices just for a couple of hours or days, or have you really tried to involve them in your daily life, like wearing these AR glasses from Brilliant Labs, let's say a whole week or something?
So what I regularly do is my Meta Ray-Bans. I wear them all the time. So they are my go-to glasses. So the thing what they do brilliant is that being glasses with a camera, if you let alone everything that does with the AI and so on. So to capture the moments, either video, audio, video photos, or just as a glasses, they are really fashionable and easy to use. So that's the first thing. So I wear them all the time, every day. So they are my go-to glasses. I have also using them as my looking glass and everything. So that's the first thing. Then I didn't try it as of yet for Brilliant Labs to wear it out so much. It's still very basic, basically, and it's more a development kit than a ready device at the moment. But Ray-Bans, they just do brilliantly what they are supposed to do at the essence basis of glasses.
Yeah. So Rolf, you see, we have some, let's say, I would call you already a nerd type of person trying and wearing all that stuff.
He's absolutely right in this podcast because we're nerding around, and it's good to hear that you find a good bridge of business and private context, because I'm a big believer that people who are getting in contact on the business case with VR and start really enjoying it, it will be swapped over into the private area because they will see the benefits of it. And it's good to hear that you also, I think we are the same. If we get the chance to try out a new hardware, we will put the hardware on, and sometimes more difficult to get the hardware back when we are not allowed to keep it. But it's great to hear. Yeah. So I must say it's really, you mentioned a lot of things about the technologies you're using and stuff you're doing on business and also on the private side. But do you see any, when you, in both directions, VR and also AR glasses, do you see any use case or where you think this could be in the future foreseen, something that not nerds like us will do it, but also like the general purpose?
So let's start with AR or mixed reality of any kind. I think that there is not one use case. So this is the discussion that I always go on and on within in the private context as well as in a work context, that it is like another set of device. It's not replacing your mobile phone. It's not replacing your computer or anything. It's an additive device that brings more convenience to our lives. Where I see currently the issue with all these AR devices is the lack of ecosystem. For example, I can ask my AR, or you can say it's an AR device, the augmentation is not only visual but also audio, like Meta glasses, you can ask, so what's the next or the best Asian restaurant next to me? It can give you this set of information using AI. But when I say, can you guide me there? And it cannot, because the ecosystem is not there. The guidance comes from probably from Google, from Apple and so on, and they are not collaborating on these topics and so on. So for me, I think these devices will be used by the common folks once it covers the whole ecosystem, so that you can use them doing things that you cannot do, like controlling your smart home, like looking at the videos. You get a message, then you don't always have to communicate using your voice, but other factors, and you can operate them. Then you can run through your system, and you kind of don't have to pull out your mobile phone to do the certain things with them. So that would be the case. And for the whole aspect of complete immersion, this virtual reality, I personally feel we are not doing the right cases. We are on a stage where we are kind of using the camera to film the stage and not creating animated movies, like not creating movies where actors are performing, where the director kind of gives its point of view. So we are just bringing the 2D games into virtual worlds and saying that there is a benefit. I don't know if there is a real benefit for it. I also see that virtual reality is kind of a performance medium where you tend to also get a little bit physically tired and you keep on doing it. So why should I, if I have to shoot zombies, same zombies 200 times, why should I do it in VR? The immersion is fun for the first 5 minutes. What happens afterwards is this, you know, repetitive factor, which kind of gets boring. If I'm not doing sports where I want to excel at something, the repetition gets boring. So I, in my opinion, the real cases of VR will be these experiences where we get AI involved, the avatars and NPCs getting intelligent, integrating our physical world into it, integrating our rooms into, like, physical rooms into these worlds, and these rooms change into something more exciting, like your Sherlock Holmes and the other crime scene where you're solving something. And back then on HoloLens 1, there was a game called, was not a game, it was more an experience called Fragments, that used HoloLens to change the room into like a crime scene where you go to a corner, mm-hmm. then you hear a kid like a little bit crying, then you look around and there were clues, and it was really immersion. It was very simple. It was on HoloLens 1, and I really liked that on the, when I looked at the roof, there was water dipping down, like the, there was water leak, and it created every drop created this tip 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 sound, beautiful. Like, I think these are the experiences where people get hooked up, or people will experience it. I think at the moment when I look at VR games being announced, there are a majority of people who are just hating on them because they are VR and they just want these titles to be available on standard consoles or PC and so on.
I think in the moment, because of the, let's say, very small user base of these kind of devices, the investment in a huge game where you really want a hard ROI, then you have to have the backup plan to go on 2D, except you're totally into it and have plenty of money to spend on it.
You covered already in your explanation a lot of pro and cons from all the different type of technology. So lucky for me, I don't need to ask the question again. And you also mentioned, if I can say, the wow factor you already described was your experience with this HoloLens 1, that it, mm-hmm. it was a good immersion. Did you had also the opposite? So what was your biggest fuck up, or the worst scenario? Would you say this was really a good demonstration of what you should not do, that you...
Right.
experience.
We still suffer from it. I guess you guys would also suffer from it, or would have suffered from it when I mention it. So back then, when the VR was coming up, like in the days of Oculus DK1, DK2, the real beginning of VR topics in the modern world, like say the second boom of VR or the third boom of VR, we can call it. People said, okay, what would be the most extreme experience I can give it to someone to convince him that this is like a thing? And then people start putting people into roller coasters.
Yay.
or scare experiences. And there are so many people still now today that I meet in my professional and private life and say, have you tried it? And say, yeah, I tried it back then and it makes me nausea and it's like not nice. And I think the worst experiences we had was these roller coasters. These tons of roller coasters that were running around in a very bad quality headsets with 3D OF, and oh my God, this is a horror. This we still fighting. I think the VR industry is still fighting them.
Absolutely true. And I think for everybody who is designing VR, AR experiences, or everything that has to do with the headset. I think for them, it's super important to know that you're not audiovisual only again. You have to implement more senses of people, like what you said, the sense of balance or the body movement and so on. You have to implement that in your design to make it really a good fit, and not to try to put people on the roller coaster. Yes. Let me go a little bit back on the business side of things. Mm-hmm. So you're trying around a lot of with stuff. So you have a vision how the future will look and will appear. And in the context of mobility, what would you think how these technologies will appear for on one side for the companies, like what you said earlier, how you implement it, but also for the customer, for the real person who is traveling from A to B?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that first of all, I don't see anytime soon in foreseeable future, like several years ahead of us, I don't see these technologies replacing the physical communication or touch between humans. So humans, as human beings, we are special beings, and we will always seek the physicality. So being together, so be together to talk to each other, to have this feeling that yes, something happened. I think this is what is our basic need as a human being overall. I see that these technologies will make traveling so much more convenient, so much more easier. For example, that a lot of people travel and then they want to work while they travel. I think with these technologies, with these headsets and so on, they will get so much more convenient. They will get like the privacy that they desire. They can go into their zone, put their glasses on. They will get more comfortable, definitely sit in the train, use those experiences, use those working solutions and get their work done. Then secondly, in the idea of bringing more precise and more needed, more tailored individual information to the travelers. Like, I want to now catch the train in 15 minutes and I want to get a burger on the way. So what is the best route? What is the best thing that fits to me to be guided to the user? The train stations are also kind of a public space where you also can meet up people and so on. So like where I am, like setting up beacons and so on. Then we also have to think about specially abled passengers. So how can their life would be so much easier to onboarding, to finding the right solutions with this combination of these different cues, which could be audio, could be visual, could be anything. So I think that overall, as we grow or go on as a being, I think it will get more and more convenient to have traveling, and then connecting the services together and making the ticketing more easier, more digitized and so on. So I see a lot of potential in these technologies to make them easier.
Okay. Your example with the route guidance, mm-hmm. if you're, for example, come to a train station and then you know when the train is coming with real-time data, for example, and it guides mm-hmm. you through. The other way around would be also quite interesting, I think, so that you as a person can enjoy more the, let's say, not the waiting time, and maybe just say, hi, I'm to the system. Hi, I'm there on the train station. If the train comes up, it registers that I'm available and I'm on the way. That it's maybe waits for a couple of, let's say, minutes or so, or calls me up, or that I get a countdown to actually get in. This would be also quite nice, I think, so that you don't have to spend your time waiting on awkward areas.
Yeah, I can imagine from my personal case, I will not say lost on a train station when you have to catch a connecting a train. Mm-hmm. This would help me to plan my schedule better, because sometimes, I'm very bad in guidance. So I know I add always a bit of buffer that I find my way because I'm The chance is high I'm running in the wrong direction first till I realize it. So I think this could be also helping for all people who are nervous. As you said, I'm absolutely with you. People still want to meet each other. And maybe there is ways that you can simulate your train ride, your journey in advance, and you get more comfortable in it till the technology is ready that it can really do real-time guidance. I think there's a lot of potential chances to make the whole journey a bit more relaxer for people like me that I know, okay, I have to go this way and not the other way.
Right. So what I mentioned before with this augmented reality glasses or something like that, this is where I'm talking about the ecosystem overall, right? So this is, I think, exactly the question. Like, there is not one killer use case, but the ecosystem, the combination, this is the basic concept of the industrial metaverse. When we talk about it, the metaverse, it's not only digital, but the connectivity between the physical and the digital. So you kind of register yourself on the platform that, okay, I am there. And then you already order to XYZ restaurant. Can you prepare something for me? As you check that, can you reach there, grab it, and come back before the train arrives, and so on. So all of these things, I think these would be more standard features. So they're like convenience cases. So I would not say that they are targeted use cases, but they are the convenient cases that should be, that would be how our lives would be. So our we already see, let alone all the immersive things, with Google Maps, we kind of tend to look at it and say, okay, yeah, I'm coming, and due to traffic situation, maybe it will take 10 minutes more than what it on average took. But when everybody is kind of interconnected and there are these, we can get more better information of how is the situation, what time the train is coming, how crowded the train station is, how long a line at a specific restaurant is. You can get very good estimates that, can you go get the stuff and come back, or you have to wait here. But while you wait here, you can also, I just saw a really cool ad from Meta today in the morning, where they say, like, the person went to a government office, typically that takes a lot of time and you have to wait in line, and he puts his Quest on and open Netflix and was watching like in a theater. So the things like these will come in. So maybe you're not getting bored, or you're waiting, maybe you're able to do your meetings and so on. But there are so many factors, connectivity, so many other things come into play here.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm absolutely with you in regards of the inter-exchange and the connectivity. And it's not one use case. And this is something that we also mention always in our discussion. You can start technically with one use case, but it's always multiple things that need to work or you can do. So good example. Yeah?
Yeah. But let me get back on the travel itself. Because I think... let's say a lot of business travel, for example, maybe today is not even needed anymore due to video conferencing, which is, let's say, before Corona hit the world, at least in Germany, it wasn't a big thing. Since then, everybody's making video calls. And the... let's say the impact of work, I also can consider that maybe it will change that not the person has to travel, but maybe the offices are virtual, for example. But this is, let's say, this is a time span until this is reality for different companies. Maybe you can tell something what you guys are doing in your company then. But what I'm interested in, if I step, for example, on a train, what can I expect as an experience from this kind of technology in the future if I'm not working, for example, or are there concepts that you are after that you can talk about, obviously, that could make the journey itself more interesting, for example?
Right. Right. Yeah. So there are some concepts that we considered. Of course, we have to look at the state of the hardware. It's not yet ready. Adaptation in Germany is also a little bit not as high as maybe US or something, you can say. But the things that we definitely see, for example, there are simpler things like what you want to eat in the train. So we thought about ideas like, okay, how you can look at the sample size or the how big a sandwich is, and then you can maybe tap on it and then you get the ingredients, and then you get a little bit more idea of how the portion size of a certain thing is. And then you can also, I think there are some cases where we thought like you look around and you see what is the city where you're crossing, and maybe having some interactive experience and some games with it, and so on. Comfort check-in is the idea, getting more more the feeling of it, but also to take the info and provide it to the people who are serving you in the train, to or helping you in the train, that this person have a certain request or something. But also in trains you get a lot of international travelers who necessarily don't speak German or even English or speak certain other languages, and I'm quite sure that in the very near future there will be possibilities that everybody can speak their own language, which they feel comfortable about, and then people can communicate with them and get some information. So a lot of ideas in this way, in this area, but we also have to look at if these are the killer ideas, or will this be like a naturally acceptable way of moving forward, which will not only be bound to a train, but for example, a few days ago, I saw there is this one video where a person have mocked up like a little proof of concept or so in a train, that you look out of the window and you see which city you are or how fast the train is going and when it's reaching where, using a mixed reality glass. And so many people send it to me and tag me, and I say, yeah, we know the thing. The thing is this information not available in every compartment on the screen? Yes, there is. So this is a nice to have. This is something that will be absolutely standard when people will be wearing the glasses on their daily use. When people will have these kind of augmented reality glasses, absolutely this will be a standard experience. You will be connected to the ecosystem in the train, that you can get the info, like you're deep into your work, you will get the info, hey, keep up, 5 minutes, your stop is approaching, so maybe pick up and get ready, and so on.
This is maybe a good example to point out what the difference maybe between applications and metaverse term is, because I think a lot of stuff you mentioned is like service utility. Yeah, it's makes the world convenient. Yeah. And people maybe won't actually download an app or something for this kind of use case if you're not providing it within the train. So it has to be available inside the train, and it has to be caught up by the device that you're wearing, and needs to be accessible there. I think this is, or maybe you can tell us a little bit around how the process is to decide, is this a feature and how you want to make it available. So
right. So first thing to address this, first thing we have to address overall is that will the time where general public or general people are wearing smart glasses, like any kind of mixed reality glasses or augmented reality glasses, will there be apps? Will we be using apps, or the whole idea of ecosystem will be proactive rather than reactive? So it's not that you trigger the information, it's more about your profile, who you are, what you're doing, the context, the location, and then the information is provided between, in the collaboration of different parties, different companies, different stakeholders that are getting involved together to make the life more convenient. So as a railway company, of course, the first thing is that the passenger should feel convenient when they are traveling. The travel should be happy, it should be nice, should be absolutely best experience you can provide. So the best experience is within this ecosystem. So when we think about our concept of the metaverse is not only this digital space, as we say, it's the combination between the physical and the virtual, but also to bring this aspects of this triangle, I call it, like location, context, and the persona, the personality. So who you are, where you are, and what you are trying to achieve. And with this triangle, you can regulate what is the best possible information that should be provided at that point to the specific user. And that would be the real case, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that always comes to my mind, if you start thinking about that, is how we messed up the internet today with all this cookie banners and tracking information. And if you imagine that you don't actually open up one web page in this analogy, but hundreds or thousands at the same time, you don't want everything to track you. You don't want to accept every cookie banner there has to be a different concept for one time privacy, and then for the persona, what's interesting you and what you want to see, or do you gain something from what you see, for example.
Absolutely. And specifically when you see as a passenger who is traveling going on business, he maybe wants to be relaxed and wants to do his email or his work, and another he's going traveling on pleasure. He wants to maybe get the information which cities is outside, but maybe not the information. This is a city also maybe linked with some historical topics where he is enjoying in a generic purpose, so that he gets something that is important for him and not important maybe for somebody else. Yeah, but I agree with you in regards of it needs to be the ecosystem, how you define it needs to be correct. And yeah, I hope that we don't get cookie banners everywhere when we run around with smart glasses and everything. You be permanently and clicking and make sure you're not running against the wall. It's too much information is coming.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is always the case. I think everybody has seen this XR extreme video where you see all of this happening around you and so on. So this is not the future anybody wants. And I think this would be the goal for it. Again, these are the decisions that we cannot make ourselves. This is something that are decided by the lawmakers and on the level of EU and so on, how the future would be. So our job is to, within these regulations, provide the best possible solutions.
Do you think, or do you, you discussed this a thousand times, I guess, but let us know your thoughts on this. Do you think that this kind of technology, maybe not the one that we have today, but if we, for example, take a look in the quality leap that Apple brought with the Vision Pro in terms of realism in certain rendering qualities and so on, would you think that dematerializes from this physical world into something digital that we have today in from the perspective of mobility? So let me add something to this question. Like a business like Deutsche Bahn, do you need to think about adding virtual layers to the entire business concept to keep your business running?
I think this is a complex question for me to answer, Personally, if I can answer this, I think we need to add virtual layers to make the traveling or the shop floors or the whole the concept of the digitization is the key. We have to do it. We are doing it. We have to do it. We have to keep on pushing it. Will it impact on people traveling or not? I think this is a complex question for me just to answer. I think there are so many aspects of it. Did telephone reduced the amount of conversation people had physically while coming to each other? I mean, must have, should have. Did radio reduce the consumption of newspaper? Should have done something like that. So there will be some aspects. But like I said, I don't think that the need for the physical contact, I think this is, we learned during COVID times how important it is for us as human beings. I think this is what, it's also a big lesson for us overall.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, that we have to look into this in all aspects, not only in traveling, but we also need to see how it's a benefit. If I think how many young kids today are not calling or using the phone to call, if they text, they are still old-fashioned, using a voice message.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of picking up the phone and dial the person and fix a problem by a phone call, they send permanently voice message back and forth. This is all things we need to also consider, is how the technology is helping us at the end of the day, not making our life more complex. Interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah. You have a good example. By mind, there was like, as I was a kid, there was no cell phone. There was these phone booths on the street. Mm-hmm. And you had always these little pieces of paper where you wrote down the numbers of your friends. And then you called and got to an answering machine and so on. And a little bit later, the pager appears so that you can send a little text message. And if you think about this, then the phone came in. And with the SMS, the pager was basically reinvented. And I would say it's still the most used thing on the phone.
Right.
Yeah, text messages.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what Rolf already mentioned, I think the younglings, they kind of do the voice now.
Yeah.
And they don't even listen to the voice at 1x speed. They listen to it at 3x speed now. So I think their lives are very, very fast paced. So listening to somebody speaking in a normal speed is also quite boring. So they go even faster.
I must say guilty. Yeah. I drive people crazy if I also consume YouTube. And if the voice is good, I can consume up to 1.5 times speed. But if the audio is not good, I can't. So then I have to go the normal way. But it's an interesting way. And I think your pager example, Zeb, is a good one. You know, it's an old technology, but it's still, I think, one of the most used way of communicating between each other.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. You have created plenty of different apps within DB. Can you tell us a little bit about which was super successful and which was the ultimate stupid idea that didn't took off?
Okay. I think that virtual reality, mixed reality trainings is super successful. So we have done now over 25 such training simulations, some that are constantly developed more and more for several years now. I can give example of the interlocking system training. It's a multi-user, multi-facet virtual reality training simulation with different kinds of interlocking system where people can work together, operate, run the network in VR, something that absolutely impossible to do in physical world without creating like a real secondary railways in it. So you have to create everything all over again. And we can simulate different weather conditions, different situations, we can never do it, of course, in a physical world. We cannot change the weather on will and so on. And then, for example, things like simulating the connecting two trains together using how you couple the trains together using different methods of it and so on, where people are allowed or it's safe to make mistakes. The mistakes doesn't cost any harm, doesn't cost anything, and you can make mistakes and you can experience mistakes and learn from them. So they are absolutely what we are currently also doing, and we continue to do so. So there's always new cases arriving, there are new topics, there are new kinds of trains coming in. So you have to bring that in, onboarding people that they can run through these and so on. So this is also all very, very good. I don't think that there is an aspect of, you can say, like a fuck up or something. But there are many smaller cases that were good for the time, but in long run, yeah. But I cannot really pinpoint, like I say, that this is the disaster, because oftentimes you, especially in VR and so on, you develop something one way and then you realize this is probably not the best way and you have to change it. I can give an example to that. For example, that we did like a digitization of a text-based book, like, and so on, so you can make it a more a learning experience. And we initially we took a lot of text in there, so you still have to read a lot, but that was quite boring. On the flip side, when you do it more in the simulation manner that people can experience and then interactively do it instead of reading it, and then the text is only as available as a secondary thing, this is what people appreciated more, or the students appreciated more, instead of like reading digital text and then getting some of the experience out there. So, but I think this is part of every development when you, especially you're developing in a totally new medium.
So sounds like the reason you don't have a negative part is you always learned out of it. So it has a benefit for it. So that's maybe, it sounds like, at least for me, when I listen to your words, that you have good examples and the other one were not bad, but you learned out of it. And as long as you're learning out of it, they're not bad because they are fit for the purpose. At least you got an experience. I would like to jump on exactly this point and say, do you have something for our audience outside which you can give as a kind of like advice of what they should do in regards of the VR XR part? Because a lot of people we know, they still think this is so far away in the future. And it sounds like you said from 2016 you're doing it. You have 25 different training models already. So you're already in. Any advice for the people who are listening to this podcast, what they should do or how they should do or what they should consider?
Right. So I think what a lot of us did, or what a lot of people are doing, is that they are trying to solve every problem with XR because they're an XR company and so on. We always have to look at the problem and see, will doing it using any XR technology will add value, or it's a problem that needs to be just digitized. That gamification on a 2D screen is good enough for that topic. I think to specifically look at from the point of view, will AR, VR will add any value to this use case in the realization, not only to do it for the sake of doing it and so on. So there are so many times we see the examples where you kind of question, like how many times you have seen a solution where you kind of put a mobile phone, look at a QR code, and then a 3D model appears in a same way. And then a lot of people show it to me, and I'm always, of course, it's rude to say it up out loud, but I'm always asking myself, why is it in augmented reality and why this is not on a screen, and like what value augmented reality is adding to it. It's not including any physical object. It's not even to the scale. It's in reality, this would not even fit on a table and so on. So yeah, I mean, do things where it adds value, basically.
Do you have something like let's say a decision matrix? Because with the trainings, for example, you earlier said they are valuable. They are a growing element. So they must be a money saver and convenient. There must be a convenient level for all your people that are doing the trainings. Do you have some kind of matrix where you say, okay, I have problem A, and which aspects do I need to look at to make a decision when it brings value for a certain kind of technology?
Right. We do not have a matrix, but there are some general things. So, for example, one is the availability. So if there is a new model of train coming up directly, it will not be available in 100, so everybody can get on it. So this is something where digitization, any kind of digitization, would help. Also, if you are simulating something that could be physically dangerous in the real world, this is also something that VR and XR can help. There are certain things that you cannot even do in real world, like cannot be so tiny that you go inside a pipe and look at something. Of course, you can do it in better in XR and so on. Always the question comes in, does the XR adds any value to this, or it will be good enough if it's done in a 2D space? If things where you perform, so a lot of or all of our XR-based trainings are performance-based training, where you really perform each and every step and each and every action. And they are quite different from what I saw with this click dummy kind of training, where you are like tap here, hold this, pick here, then the action happens. So kind of retraining the muscle memory is also one of the ideas.
Mm-hmm. And what about gamification? It would be also interesting for me, because you said it was not a fuck-up, it was a learning. Putting a lot of text in it, so people have to read it. And in the end, so as at least I understood you this way, bringing this to the performance level made a bigger value to the entire training or the entire solution for the problem. Is that the case, so that you can transfer or think of, can you transfer it to a different kind of medium and make it faster or better to understand?
I think some things you can make more interesting. I saw one experience, for example, for the security training, like the cybersecurity training for in an office space. I mean, we all have to go through these trainings, and this like was a VR training where you sit and you're like having your workspace, and they were simulating certain things like this device can hear it, or you don't leave your laptop open, and so on. So it's all these things which you read about and you have to know as an employee and so on. But then you kind of, it's also a little bit fun, right? And then there are some gamification elements on it, like if a hacker kind of get in, then you kind of, everything turns dark and so ha 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 ha. And so, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit fun, and it also brings this memory. You remember it more, much better. Yeah. Like, yeah, I remember I made this mistake in this VR experience, and then this happened. So this is the mistake I should not be making.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, great example, because I think every topic where it's not really easy to imagine or you don't visualize it easily would help to explain the trainee what the impact is. I like this when you do something. How many people are clicking on emails and they don't see when a virus is coming and what could be the cause for an organization? But if you make it in this fun part, they will at least remember and recognize what the problem is.
Yeah.
You technically have done all your questions, right?
I've gone through all my questions.
That's good. So that comes
and
to
I've
one of
him to answer it a little more deeply.
But and lucky he didn't punch you as you offered him earlier. So therefore, at least everything seems to be quite nice here. So my one last question, because some people still outside believe we nerds wearing our glasses 24/7. So do you have an average number of hours per day, week, months you're in VR? And we already know you are one of the people who are using VR a lot. So do you have any number?
I think maybe if I check my Quest, I can get a number. But let's say that I wear it 6 days a week somehow.
Yeah.
And maybe for depends on how interesting the thing is. If there is a new game that I'm testing out, then it could be 3 hours, 4 hours in a day.
Yeah.
Normally I don't try to do it more than an hour or so, but this is also life, so you have other things to do, family and so on, so I don't have these this anymore, that I can just keep on playing games and so on. But like I said, with the Meta Ray-Bans, with this whole thing, I am wearing it 8, 10, 15 hours a day. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's in my private life and everywhere. So I can, when I'm going for a walk with my dog, then I can take like nice pictures of him and so on. And so the messaging is going on. You can make calls and so on. So it's really convenient overall.
Yeah. So very important as a summary. So a VR headset, 6 days a week, 1 to 3 hours. So this still means not 24/7. So people get relaxed. It's not a 24/7 one. AR glasses with all the values you mentioned. Yes, of course. And if you be like us, where we have to wear glasses anyhow, it's not an extra device. It's a cooler device. And as you said, getting text message and stuff done while going out with your dog, it's much easier instead of being a mobile phone zombie staring at your mobile phone. So I think it's a great summary. So I must say it was really great learning. I'm really impressed to hear that you are since 2016 active and all the different training, and really nice that you mentioned things like training where the environment is too complex to simulate. It's easy to do in VR. Training where it's too dangerous, that people can make mistakes without getting harmed, which also something, a good thing. But my personal highlight is that you don't have negative experience. You always learn something out of it, which I really can say, people outside, it's a very clear message. It's no bad thing. You can always learn, start using VR in your environment, and simply make sure next time you can sit here on the empty space and be part of this podcast, right?
Why not?
All right. I would say then, thanks again for your time.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We still have a plan to invite you back with the other Mobility Track members, so maybe have a bit of a round table. So we will potentially schedule this in the near future to show also the benefit of VR. That means no traveling, everybody can jump. It's easier to find a one-hour slot with the busy people like you and the others. And I would say thanks for everybody who are listening or watching our podcast on our YouTube channel. Stay tuned for our next session and enjoy it. Bye-bye.